Welcome to Tosfos Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Basra Daf Yud Dalid. Today's shiur, Mirsa Hashem, will begin 10 lines from the top. Before we begin the Gemara, we glance in the margin under our no say, our topic heading, which reads Shiuron Shel Urech VeHekev Shel Sefer Torah, the dimensions that constitute the length and the circumference of a Sefer Torah. The Gemara, Tana Rabbanan, Ein Oisin Sefer Torah, Lo Orko Yoiser Al Hekefo, Velo Hekefo Yoiser Al Erko, Orkoi. One shall not prepare a Sefer Torah whose length is greater than its Hekef, the circumference, nor circumference greater than its length. Shalo Es Rebbe, Shur Sefer Torah Bakama. The question was posed to Rebbe, the length of a Sefer Torah is how much? And of course, that information, if you associate it with what we just said, would also correspond to the circumference. He was asked the length of a Sefer Torah to be how much? Omalen, the Gvil, Shisha. If you use Gvil parchment, then it will be 6 Tvachim. The Klaf Bekama, if you use the Klaf type parchment, what would its length be? And he answers, Eini Yodea. As far as further definition of Klaf and Gvil, Mirtz Hashem, we will see that discussed in the Tosfos. In the meantime, you'll notice in our Gemara we have a bracketed section. Following the brackets, the Gemara will raise a question on that which we have just said. Within the brackets, we'll see some stories involving Amoroyim that wrote Sifrei Torah. And in addition to that, we'll see an internal bracketed section which discusses Rav Yanai having planted many vineyards. And the connection, the association will become clearer when we get into the Gemara itself. But in the meantime, I want to point out, right after the brackets, as we just said, there will be a question raised on the dimensions and the relationship between the length and circumference that we just gave. You'll notice, by way of general outline of Gemara structure, that this is a very long question because it takes in a very long Tanaic source, and the question ends 5 lines from the top of Omid Beis. So, what is the point? What's the main point? Well, that will become clear likewise. When we get to the top of Omid Beis, things will become much clearer. Now that we've laid out the general structure of the Gemara, let us go into the bracketed section. Rav Huna Kosaf Shivin Sifrei Doraisa. Rav Huna is reputed to have written 70 Sifrei Torah, which is an amazing accomplishment if you take things at face value. And the Lo Isrami Leah never worked out Elochad, except for one time that the length and the circumference were the same. So that the Braisa dictates a length circumference ratio or relationship, and in reality it's something that's very hard to come by. Rav Acha Bar Yankiv Kosav Chad Amashchei De'igli. Rav Acha wrote one Sefer Torah on the skin of a calf, on calf skin, the Isramilan. It worked out that the length and the circumference were one and the same. Amazing. We just saw Rav Huna making many attempts, and only once it worked out, and he tried once and it worked out. Well, Yavulei Rabbonon Einayhu Venoch Nafshei. The rabbis, literally speaking, they placed their eyes upon him, they gazed upon him, and he died. This is associated with the concept of an ayin hora, which we call the evil eye, the eye that sometimes is aroused through jealousy. And you can understand that phenomenon in this context, but the unfortunate result was that he, Rav Acha, died. Amulei Rabbonon L'Rav Hamnuna. The Rabbonon informed Rav Huna, Kosev Rabbi Ami Arba Mea Sifrei Torah. Rabbi Ami wrote 400 Sifrei Torah. That is humanly impossible. And therefore, Omar Luhu, Rav Hamnuna told them, Dilma, maybe what he wrote, when you say he wrote 400 Sifrei Torah, he wrote, Torah Tziva Lonu Moshe Kosav. He wrote that Pasuk. You might ask, well, how is that associated with Sefer Torah? It's one pasuk. Could that possibly be classified as a Sefer Torah? So Tosfos explains, Mirza Shem will get to it later, that when a child learns how to speak, his father teaches him Torah. What does that mean? He teaches him that pasuk, Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. And as such, that's considered Torah. So if you wrote that 400 times, you would be considered having written 400 Sifrei Torah. Amalei Rava Rabbi Zera. And here you can see we have the internal brackets. That's because this is not related to writing of Sifrei Torah, but it is related to the incredulous amount or number that we just saw before. So Rava told Rabbi Zera, Nota Rabbi Yanai Arba Mea Karmi. Rabbi Yanai planted 400 vineyards. Amalei, when you say planted 400 vineyards, Dilma Shtayim Keneged Shtayim V'Achas Yotze Zonov. Maybe he planted series of five vines in the following format. Two opposite two, forming what you would say maybe the corners of a square, and one more, the fifth one, coming from behind. By all means, this is the time to remind everyone to use the Pirush Chai, the book of illustrations that we have been using till now in learning Bava Basra. It will be very, very helpful as we go on with the upcoming Gemara, which is made considerably easier by using the illustrations. Meisvei, we mentioned that before that we're going to now raise a question, a long question. On the side, we have a topic heading, the Nosei, which reads as follows. Midoisov shel ha'oron utchulosa. We're going to learn about the holy ark that was in the Beis HaMikdash, its dimensions, and what was contained therein. HaGemara makshe kusha ruka. The Gemara will be raising a question, which is here in a long question form. Al hamidois shenitlu sefer Torah li'el. Regarding the dimensions given for a Sefer Torah mentioned earlier, the question will come, Midivrei Rabbi Meir, Shemuvoim Bebraisa Aruka, that will be brought in the name of Rabbi Meir in this long Tanaic source, Shelefiv, according to Rabbi Meir, Hoya Mochim Shel Shnei Tvachim Bilvad, Shobem Hoya Munach Sefer Torah, that in the Oron, according to Rabbi Meir's calculations, there was a space for, in addition to the Ten Commandments that were on two stone tablets, there was room for a Sefer Torah. Lufi ha-cheshbonis d'liel, yotzei d'roichav ha-sefer Torah, yoser mishnei tfochim. And through the calculations that we'll be presenting, it will come out that the width of the Sefer Torah would have been more than two tvachim. As far as what ramifications that has for our sukkah, that will become clearer later on. Meisvei. Now, the source. Oron shalso Moshe amosayim v'chetzi orko v'yamo v'chetzi rochbo v'yamo v'chetzi koymos. So you can see in our Mark Gemaras, we've written in the dimensions in number form, so the Oron measured 2.5 amas in length, 1.5 amas in width, 1.5 amas in height. The amo bas shisha tefachim, calculating the amo based on a 6 tefach per amo equivalency. So the length of the Oron would be, if you have 6 tefachim, 6 handbreadths per amo, the length 2.5 amas, that's 15 tefachim. And the width 1.5 amas, one amma is 6 tfachim, another half an amma, 3 more, that's 9 tfachim. The haluchos, when we mentioned, by the way, that the amma was made of 6 tfachim, there is another approach to amma dimensions, and you can see we have a double underline later on in the source where you see the expression amma bas chamisha tfachim. That's because there is another standard that when dealing with vessels of the Beis HaMikdash, the amo for vessel measurement was in terms of 5 tefachim. But in the meantime, we're dealing with the first approach. We continue. V'aluchos, orkon, shisha, v'rochbon, shisha, v'ovion, shloisha. The luchos, the stone tablets containing the Ten Commandments, each one, there were two of them, each one measured 6 by 6, length 6, width 6, and thickness 3 handbreadths. And they were lying side by side, munochos keneged orkei shel oron. So they were positioned side by side in the length of the oron, so each one was 6 square, so now you have tablets measuring 12 by 6, since you lay down 2 of them, one next to the other, in the length of the oron. Kama luchos ochlos b'oron, shemos tfochim. How much do the luchos take up of the interior of the oron? 12 tfochim, which is 2 amos. Nishtairu sham, from the remains in the calculation, shlosha tfochim. We mentioned that the total length of the Oron was 2.5 amos, so we've used up 2 amos of length for the Luchos. 1/2 amos, which is 3 tfachim, 1 amos, 6 tfachim, so 1/2 amos is 3 tfachim, remains. Now we're going to account for those 3 tfachim. Say mehen, subtract from the 3 amos tefach, 1 handbreadth, chetzi l'kaisel zeh, the thickness of the wall of the Oron, would each wall was a tefach, so 2 walls in the length, 2 ends of the oron, that accounts for 1 handbreadth. Nishtayru shom shnei tvachim. There remains now an interior space of 2 tvachim. Shebohen sefer Torah munach. And we've dashed underlined this, because this is going to be the main point when we develop with a question later on. There was a sefer Torah placed in the holy ark, and it was placed in those remaining 2 tvachim of space. Shenemar, and how do you know that there was a sefer Torah in the holy ark? The pasuk says, "Ein ba'oron rak shnei luchos avonim asher hiniach sham Moshe." My ein ba'oron rak. There are a couple of words here that are limitation words. Ein and the word rak, and this constitutes miut achar miut. One limitation following a limitation, and as far as rules of learning are concerned, they mirach amir el the rabbis sefer Torah shemunach b'oron. A double limitation. It's like when you have two negatives and you multiply 2 negatives, you come out with a positive. Here you have 2 limitations, you come out with an inclusionary. And this pasuk includes or makes a reference or an allusion to. Besides the 2 tablets of the 10 Commandments, there was a Sefer Torah also lying in the Oron. Pirnasta Oron Lokar, we've accounted for the dimensions as far as the length of the Oron. Tseu Parnes Oron Lerochbo. Now, as I mentioned earlier, as we continue reading the source, we'll see very interesting points of information. But as far as the heart of our question, we've already seen the information that constitutes the heart of our question. In the meantime, we continue now with the width of the Oron. That's Tse Uparnes Oron L'Rochbo. Now account for the Oron in its width. Kama Luchos Ochlos Baron. How much of the width will be taken up by the Luchos? Shisha Tvachim. 6 Tvachim. Nishtayru sham shloshet tvachim. There was a total width of 9 tvachim. We mentioned before, we counted for 6. We have 3 remaining. Tse mehen tefach. Subtract from the 3 1 full tefach. Chetzi l'kaisel zeh, chetzi l'kaisel zeh. 1/2 a tefach per wall on the sides. Nishtayru sham shnei tvachim. There remains a gap of 2 tvachim. What are we going to use that extra gap of 2 tvachim? Well, did we not mention before there was a Sefer Torah that was lying in the Oron? The Sefer Torah that was lying in the Oron, it had a width of 2 tvachim, so its length was lying in the width across the width of the Oron. So there was that Sefer Torah. We didn't make mention in the source of how long the Sefer Torah was, but once again, its length was lying in the width of the Oron, and the 2 tvachim of width that we just mentioned remain, are there, they remain, shelo yehi Sefer Torah nichnas v'yotzik shudochu, divrei Rabbi Meir. So as to enable us to take out the Sefer Torah and put it back in without without squeezing it in. Dochuk means restricted space, pressed in. So you have enough room to maneuver. In other words, you would reach into the aron, the top and the bottom of the Sefer Torah, and you'd have room to put your hands in and remove it and replace it, return it, because of this extra two tochem of space in the width of the aron. We have brackets that start here and go till the end of the source at the top of Amud Beis. The reason for the brackets is simply that the focus of the Gemara's Kasha right now is on Rebbe Meir. So we want to create the impression that Rebbe Yehuda is, we'll say, secondary as far as our immediate agenda. However, later on Amud Beis, the Gemara will deal with information reported to us by Rebbe Yehuda. So have no fear, we'll come back to emphasize and focus on Rebbe Yehuda's comments later. In the meantime, let's read through the Vraisa with Rebbe Yehuda. Rebbe Yehuda Omer, the Amo Bas Chamisha Tvachim, the Oron being a vessel of the Beis HaMikdash, his opinion is that the Amos reported in the Torah were Amos measuring 5 handbreadths. So according to Rebbe Yehuda, it would be the length of the Oron, which was in the Torah 2.5 Amos, each Amo being 5, so 2 times 5 is 10. Half of 5 is 2.5. That gives you 12.5 tochem of length of Oron, and 1.5 amos in width gives you 7.5 tochem of width. V'haluchos orkon shisha v'rochbon shisha v'alvion shlosha. The luchos were not given in amo measurements to begin with. The luchos are reported through the oral tradition on the luchos is in handbreadths. So we know that the luchos were 6 by 6, and there were 2 of them, just like we said before, and the thickness 3 tvachim, and they were munochos v'orko shon. They were lying in the aron in its length. So kama luchos ochos v'aron. How much did the luchos account for in the length? Shneim osor tvachim. 12. How long was the entire aron? We said before the entire aron was 12.5 tvachim. Nishtayer shom chatzi tefach. That leaves you a total of a half a tefach. Etzba l'koysel zeh, v'etzba l'koysel zeh. Without getting into details, the Tosis will elaborate on this, but for right now, the thinking is, and I'm telling you we're going to change this later on, but right now the thinking is that the half a tefach that remains is made of, tefach obviously is a hand breath, half of tefach is going to be 2 fingers. Assuming for right now, but we're going to change this later, assuming for right now that 4 finger widths accounts for a hand breath, so that the half tefach that remained, subtract or divide that 1 finger for the thickness of the one wall of the aron, and at the other end of the aron another wall, so that accounts for the additional half a tefach. Pirnasta Oron Lorcha, we've accounted for the Oron in its length. Seipernas Oron Lorcha, now the width. Kamo Luchos Ochlos Boron, how much of the width of the Oron are consumed or taken up by the Luchos? Shisha Tvachim. 6 out of how many? We said 7.5. So Nishtayer Shom Tefach Mechsa, there remains a balance of 1.5 Tvachim. Tsei Mehen Chatzi Tefach. From the 1.5 tefachim that remains, subtract a half a tefach, etzba l'koysel zeh, the etzba l'koysel zeh. One finger for these are the side walls, one finger for thickness of one wall, and a finger thickness for the other wall. Nishtayer shom tefach. There remains 1 tefach in our accounting for the width of the aron. So shebo, in that one tefach that remains, amudim oimdim, there were silver staffs that were placed there. There's a Rashi toward the end of the Rashi column, shebo amudim oimdim, shnei amudei kesef kemin amudei sefer Torah, were 2 poles, like the poles that that are found in a Torah scroll. And these poles Sheikhin l'orkei, they were lying in the length of the aron. The haluchos bei nehen, the luchos were positioned between these two poles lying in the length of the aron. Shenemar amudov osa kesef. So now the tefach that remained in our width accounting was enough space to have to, in addition to the luchos that were already there and we already accounted for them, you have these two poles lying alongside the length of the luchos. I know we said the length of the luchos and the length of the aron, but the poles had a width, and the combined width of those two poles would consume that tefach that remained. The pasuk says shenemar. The pasuk indicating silver poles. It says apirion osel lo hamelach Shlomo miatzei alvonon amudav osel kesef refidos zov merkavu argoman v'chulei. We're not going to involve ourselves with the literal translation of the pasuk. Suffice it to say that you see in this pasuk a reference to amudav osel kesef. We continue. Va'argas sheshigu v'plishtim durin l'lukei Yisrael munach mitzido. There was a cart that, if you open up the Tanakh, you'll see in Sefer Shmuel an incident where the Philistines had captured the Aron and eventually returned it. And in this cart, there was a gift that was sent to the Jewish people. And that cart is what we're referring to, the Argus Sheshigu Plishto L'Kel Yisrael. That cart received a very special distinction, that it was lying next to, it was placed in the Holy of Holies next to the Aron. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Veskli Azov Asher Hashe Vosem Lo Osham Tosimu V'Argaz Mitzido V'Shilachtem Oisoy V'Halach. That pasuk, again, we're not involving ourselves with literal translations, but that in that pasuk you see the reference to the special cart and gifts that were sent to Elokei Yisrael. The olav, the cart, now provided a new role, and that is Sefer Torah. The olav, Sefer Torah munach. Upon that cart that was placed in the Holy of Holies was the Beis HaMikdash Sefer Torah. Shneemar, lokeach es Sefer HaTorah hazeh v'samtem ha'yisei mitzad aroin bris Hashem. And the pasuk in Dvorim indicates that the Sefer Torah should be placed next to the Holy Ark. Mitzad hoya munach velo besocho. The pasuk itself says on the side of the Aron. That would indicate, as Rabbi Yehuda holds, that it was lying to the side of the Aron, not contained within it. But Rabbi Meir said the Sefer Torah was contained within it, and he was based on the pasuk of Ein Bor and Rak. So umani mekayim Ein Bor and Rak. What do I do, namely Rabbi Yehuda, with that pasuk, which served as a basis for Rabbi Meir having the Sefer Torah within the Aron and not just next to it? So Rabbi Yehuda says Ein Bor and Rak is l'rabois. It comes to include. We continue now at the top of Omid Beis. Shivrei luchos shemunochem ba'aron, the fragments of the first tablets that Moshe Rabbeinu had received from the Almighty, and upon seeing the Jews worshipping the Egel Hazav, the golden calf, he, as the Torah recounts, smashed those, and those fragments are called the Shivrei luchos, and they are to be placed in the Aron. That's what he Rabbi learns from Ein Bor and Rak. What each one does with each other's sources, that is what the Gemara will deal with later on. However, right now we have to focus in on the original reason for bringing in this Bryson, namely the question on the dimensions of a Sefer Torah. The Isaka Deit of Sefer Torah Hekefo Shisha Tvachim, if, as was told to us before by Rebbe, by the way, he told us that the length of a Sefer Torah is 6 tvachim, and we mentioned the circumference and the length are, they match one another. So if a Sefer Torah length is 6 tvachim, so then its circumference is 6 tvachim. Now, we are asking, if that's so, that the circumference of a Sefer Torah is 6 tvachim, Well, then let's look into this matter. Kol sheyesh bekefo shloisha tefachim yesh bo rochav tefach. For every three tefachim of circumference, there is one tefach of diameter. With one tefach, that would be the diameter in this case. And here we're dealing with not three tefachim, but six tefachim. So you'll have two. If you had a circle, an absolute, a pure circle, measuring circumference six, its diameter would be two. However, when you're talking about a Sefer Torah, and it's rolled up, it's not a pure circle. The Kevon de Lansiosa Nikval, since the Sefer Torah is attached to two poles, and we call them Atzei Chaim, and you roll them to the middle. In other words, the poles are, each pole has Sefer Torah, part of a Sefer Torah wrapped around it. A closed Sefer Torah is what we're just, which, what we're describing here. It's rolled to the middle. So, Nofish Le Mitre Tifcha Rivocha De Beini Beini. When you roll the two, we'll call the two halves of the Sefer Torah toward the center, then the width of it is going to be more than two tefachim. There's the, we'll call it the airspace between the two sections. So, how much space did we say existed in the after we accounted for the length of the Aron? We suggested before that the after accounting for the thickness of the walls, you had two tefachim into which to place the Sefer Torah. That's what we mentioned before. But right now we've, if you were going to assume, like Rebbe taught, that the Sefer Torah dimension is has a circumference of six, and hence its diameter will be two, but it's really two plus. How much space did we have available into which to place the Sefer Torah? Just two. So how can you have two plus fitting into a space of two? Betray pushni. Two pushni means two handrests. Pushni is tefach. Eichi Yosef. How can it sit? How can it lie in a space of two tefachim when the width of the Sefer Torah was a little more? Omar Ravacha Bar Yankiv. Sefer Azora L'Tchilasohu Niglau. The Sefer of the Azora, literally the courtyard, means the Sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote. It was used on Parshas Hakil once every 7 years, and the Kohen Gadol would use it once a year on Yom Kippur to read from it. That's the Sefer Azora. That's the Sefer Torah we're talking about. It's called Azora Courtyard because when it was read in the courtyard. Where was it stored? In the Aron HaBris, as we just mentioned. Where was that Sefer Azora? How was it constructed? It was on one pole. That's L'Tchilasohu Nigla. Was literally means it was rolled to the beginning. It wasn't on two separate poles, but on one pole, like we've described in earlier sugyas that we've seen already in our perek. So you don't have to account for the we'll call it the airspace between the two halves of the Sefer Torah rolled toward the middle, because it's all rolled into one roll. But still, even if you say that it constitutes a perfect circle, once we establish that the length of the Sefer Torah, which matches its circumference, is six, and its diameter is two, so good, it has a diameter of two, how much space did you have available for putting it into two? How can something that measures two fit into an airspace that measures two? If you want something measuring two to fit into something, got to be a little more space. Omar Ravashi. So Ravashi answers, and I hope you're using the Pirush Chai. The Sefer Torah was really, as we said, was on one pole. However, when you were coming close to the end of rolling it up, you didn't roll it up to the very end, because then it would really have a width, a diameter of two. You rolled it up close to the end. However, the balance, the remainder that you didn't roll up, was rolled up from its end, and it was placed on top of the the majority roll up of the Sefer Torah, and that we'll call it like was folded. It was rolled up and placed on top of the basic roll, so that after all said and done, the bulk of the Sefer Torah, when rolled up, did not have a diameter, a width of 2 full tefachim. Also, almost 2 tefachim, because the balance, as we said, was rolled up, and that's what Rav Ashi says, the Korach Bei Purta, a little bit was rolled up separately, the Karche Liel, and that part was placed on top of the Sefer Torah. For those of you who are not using a Pirush Chai, then I can understand there might be difficulty relying on the verbal explanation, but that's why you should have the book of illustrations available. The main thing for us is that we've answered the question. The length of the Sefer Torah could be 6 tefachim, and that could very well have been the length of the Sefer Torah in the Oron. And as far as the space available for placing it, the Sefer Torah had a diameter of 2, but you didn't roll up the Sefer Torah completely to create a Sefer Torah with a diameter of 2, because you left a little bit, we'll say, not rolled up as part of the main Sefer Torah, and you rolled it up separately, placing it on top of the Sefer Torah, and hence there was room for in the Oron for the to contain the Sefer Torah. Now we go back to the two opinions we saw in the long source, and we ask, what does each one do with ideas of the other one and other details? For Buda, Mekami de Lesiagas, as far as Buda is concerned, who mentioned that the Sefer Torah was placed outside the Oron on the cart sent by the Philistines, but before that took place in Sefer Shmuel. What about the hundreds of years before that? Sefer Torah, before the Mekami de Lesiagas, before the Argus, before that cart came, Sefer Torah, Hechi Have Yosef, where was the Sefer Torah lying? Answer, Rabbi Yehuda will tell you, and once again, Rabbi Yehuda insisted on the Sefer Torah being mitzad, like the pasuk in the Torah itself says, mitzad, next to, not inside. Dapo have nafik minei v'yosef ilei Sefer Torah. There was a shelf that, we'll say, protruded from the side of the Holy Ark, and on that shelf, from the outside of protruding from the outside of the Holy Ark, the Sefer Torah, according to Rabbi Yehuda, was placed. Rabbi Meir, Hai Mitzad Oron, Mai Ovid Lei. We have a little star. You can refer back to Omid Aleph to see where this is coming from. What does Rabbi Meir do with Rabbi Yehuda's citation of Mitzad Oron? After all, according to Rabbi Meir, the Sefer Torah was inside the Oron. Mitzad means next to. So what does Rabbi Meir do with the next to idea? Answer, Ahu, Miboy Lei, the Misnach Lei Mitzad, Velo Misnach Beini Luchi Ulom Begave Min Hatzad. He takes the word mitzad oron to mean that the Sefer Torah was lying next to the tablets, not between the tablets. So it was lying next to the tablets, but the gave means but within the oron, on the side of the tablets. Rabbi Meir, Amudim Hecha Havu Kaimi. Rabbi Meir, in his calculations, made no reference to the silver staffs that Rabbi Yehuda accounted for. So according to Rabbi Meir, where do the silver staffs lie? And now Rashi elaborates a bit more. Let's look at Rashi together on the upper part of the Rashi commentary. Heche hava kaimi kevon de matzrich tefach mikan the tefach mikan v'rocha v'oron shelo yetzi sefer Torah shelo yehi sefer Torah yetzi v'nichlas b'dochak. Rabbi Meir made an accounting of the width of the Oron, leaving a tefach, say 2 tefachim, one on each end of the Sefer Torah. So there was, he made an accounting of the that we'll say that extra 2 tefachim for the reaching in and removing and returning the Sefer Torah. Well, according to him, then the amudim, ha'amudim heichamanchi shel halo yimatu es achalal. Where would the staffs be lying? Because if you're going to put them in the aron, they're going to be taking up some of that space that you needed for the removal and return of the Sefer Torah. So he answers very simply. We go back to the Gemara. Mi baroi, the staffs were outside. They weren't in the aron. Rabbi Meir shivrei luchos dimilchum ba'aron monole. Where, according to Rabbi Meir, from where does he know that the luchos fragments were inside the aron? He, Rabbi Yehuda, learned that from the expression ein bo and rak. Rabbi Meir used ein bo and rak for the Sefer Torah inside the aron. What about the fragments? Answer: Nafgale mid Rav Huna. He learns it from Rav Huna's teaching. Yom Rav Huna, my dichtiv asher nikro shame Hashem spoke his yeshiva kuvim olav. That pasuk, which is in Sefer Shmuel, melame shaluchos v'shevaluchos munoches minochem ba'aron. The double expression in the pasuk indicates that the luchos fragments were also inside the aron. V'idach. The opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. What does he do with this pasuk of Asher Nikra? He needs it for Rabbi Yochanan's teaching. Gemara Rabbi Yochanan, Rav Shimon Beichoy, Malamit She Hashem Bechol Kinuyov Munochin Ba'aron. That the ineffable name of the Almighty, along with all the other kinuyim, other holy names of the Almighty, were written and placed inside the aron. That's what the pasuk means when it says shame, shame Hashem spoke, the names of God were in the aron. V'idoch nami miboy alei lochi, a Rabbi Meir, does he not need the pasuk of Asher Nikra shame for that, for the names of God? So if that's the case, where is Rabbi Meir going to learn the luchos fragments inside the aron? The Gemara says inochi nami. Yes, Rabbi Meir does acknowledge that point, that Asher Nikro, shame is for the multitude of names inside the aron. If that's the case, then where does Rabbi Meir learn luchos fragments inside the aron? Answer: Nafkale midatoni Rav Yosef. He learns it from Rav Yosef's teaching. Detoni Rav Yosef. You have a pasuk that says in Dvarim, it says Asher Shibarta v'samtom Malame shaluchos v'shivrei luchos munochin ba'aron. The pasuk makes reference to Asher Shibarta, the broken ones. Those are the fragments of the luchos, the samtam, and they are placed in the. Sometimes you will place them, meaning in the aron, along with the tablets themselves, the second set of Ten Commandments. The idach Rabbi Yehuda, hahu miboy alei lechareish lakish. The pasuk of Asher Shibarta is used by Rabbi Yehuda for something else. The omereish lakish, Asher Shibarta, that phrase is the Almighty saying as follows. The Almighty said to Moshe, Yasher kochacha she shibarta. See, the word asher has to do with, in this context, it means strength. Yasher kochacha, be of increased strength in the merit of your having broken the first set of tablets. The Kodesh Baruch, the Almighty, was conceding to Moshe Rabbeinu, expressing his approval to Moshe Rabbeinu for having smashed the first set of luchos in light of the idolatrous celebration of the golden calf. Before we continue in the Gemara, we have on the side a Nosei / Mivneh heading, a topic heading with a structural note. A diamond appears. You will notice this highlights the expression Sidron Shel, we have Hanavim, Aksuvim. We'll be dealing with the order of the prophets and the order of the holy writings. What is their proper order? In other words, if you're going to create a scroll containing all of the prophets, you would want to have an order. I just want to point out a personal or editorial note. We're going to see in this Gemara discussion concerning order of that. This Gemara, for whatever reason, doesn't serve as a basis for the way books are printed today. Books containing the Tanakh and the order that you find in the books doesn't necessarily correspond to that which we see in the Gemara. So that if you happen to be the owner of a Tanakh and you say, well, the order doesn't correspond to the Gemara, you have to research why that is. We're going to be dealing with the Gemara, Tanaic sources in the Gemara, and the Amoraim explaining, justifying, or giving the background justification for this order. Another marking that you will see is a house marking, which introduces the word mifti, where the Gemara says, well, let's look into a particular point and analyze it. The double underline highlights the expressions. You'll see Hoshea Kodim and likewise Yeshaya Kodim. These are points that are going to be pursued by the Gemara. Mibchinas Seder HaDoros, from the standpoint of literally order of generations, genealogy, or his history, Hoya Lanu Lahakdim Nevi'im Misyomim. Certain prophets should have been placed earlier, corresponding to their chronological position in historical terms. V'lama sidru al haseder nochi. Why does their current positioning, as far as the way the Gemara presents it, why does it not correspond with their historical positioning? Now, the Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan. Sidron shel Nevi'im, the order of the books of the prophets. Yoshua, Shoifim, Shmuel, Melochim, Yirmiyah, Yechezkel, Yeshaya, Ushneimos. Ushneimosar, we often refer to as the Treyasar. Also referred to, I think I've mentioned before, somewhat with a tone of circumspection, they call the minor prophets. Minor, not because they were any less in greatness, but because their works are short. So they're minor in terms of length of works. And hence you'll see, more points this out, 12 were compiled into one book that we call Shnei Masar, the 12, or Trei Asar. Michti, Hoshea Kodim, we find that the prophet Hoshea, who is part of the Trei Asar, chronologically speaking, was earlier than some of these prophets mentioned here. So, Dichtiv, there's a pasuk that says Tchilas Dvar Hashem Hoshea. Are you to read this pasuk literally, which means the first speaking of God was with Hoshea? V'chiim Hoshea Dibur Tchila. What, Hoshea was the first one that the Almighty conversed with? V'halo Mi Moshe Vad Hoshea Kamenavim Hoyu, from Moshe Rabbeinu, who we're referring to as the first of the prophets that the Almighty communicated with. As far as the called the Gemara discussion, God certainly appeared to, we know he appeared to the forefathers, but as far as we'll call the formal list of Nevi'im, Moshe Rabbeinu is being presented here as the first one. He was certainly earlier than Hoshea, and many prophets arose between the time of Moshe Rabbeinu and Hoshea. Why? What does the pasuk then mean when it says the first of God speaking was with Hoshea? The Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan explains, Sheyotchila Larbo Nevi'im. He was the first of a specific group of four prophets, Shinisnabu Boisa Perek, that prophesied at the same time historically. V'yeluhain. These are the four: Hoshea, Yeshaya, Amos, Umicha. Now, that having been said, that Hoshea was part of a group of these four, so Veliktime Hoshea Bereisha, shouldn't Hoshea then appear at the beginning? And in our list we have Yeshaya appearing before the Trei Asar. So why is that? Why is Hoshea not before Yeshaya? If Hoshea was spoken to first before Yeshaya. The Gemara answers, Kevan Dichtiv Nivu Ose Gabi Chagai Zechar Malachi, since his prophecies are written or found together with the other Treyasar, the other 11 for a total of 12, and the prophets just cited Chagai Zechariah Malachi are part of that Treyasar. The Chagai Zechariah Malachi Soif Nevi'im Havu, and they were prophets that were at the end of the historical period of prophecy. Choshev Lei Bahadayo. So Hoshea is figured together with them. Question, V'lichtevei lichudei v'lichtemei, Why just not write a separate book, a separate scroll of Hosea, and place him earlier? Put him before Yeshaya as a separate scroll. The Gemara says, "Aidi de zutar mircha." Since there is quantity wise, zutar means small. There's very little prophecy of Hosea. So how much, when you write it down, how much would there be? Very, very little. If you'd have it as a separate scroll, so to speak, Mirchas, it would get lost. So for technical reasons, because of its short length, it has to be combined with the other prophets of short length, and because part of that group of 12 was Chagi, Zechar, Malachi, which were at the end of the prophetic period, the Hosea figures in together with them, and hence Yeshaya comes out before, even though historically Hosea was spoken to by the Almighty before Yeshaya. Michti, Yeshaya Kodim Mirmi of Yecheskel. We know that Yeshaya historically was before these two prophets. These two prophets, Yirmi and Yecheskel, they lived at the very end of the first Beis HaMikdash. Yeshaya lived in the middle of the first Beis HaMikdash period. Certainly, we'll put it to be more accurate, not at the very end. So, Likdamei Yeshaya Bereisha, have Yeshaya earlier. And if you go refer back to the Tanaic source, you notice that Yirmiyahu and Yecheskel, they are in the number 5 and 6 positions respectively, Yeshaya being number 7. Why is that? Answer. Kevon de Melochim Sofei Churina, since the Book of Kings is or culminates with the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, the Yirmiyah Kulei Churina, and the Book of Yirmiyahu is practically a book of we'll call it a prophet, we call him the prophet of doom, Churban, a prophet of destruction. The Yecheskel and that prophet, Reishi Churban of Asefei Nechamta, the beginning of Yecheskel portrays destruction, doom, and the end, comfort and resurrection. The Yeshaya Kulei Nechamta, and the book of Yeshaya is referred to as complete consolation. So we attach like things to one another. Samchinon churban or lechurbana. Yirmiyahu follows from the Book of Kings. In that sense, you have destruction next to destruction. Venechemta lenechemta. And the end of Yecheskel, which was Nechama, is then that which precedes Yeshaya, which is also Nechama. Sitron shuksuvim, the order of the writings. Rus, v'sefer Tehillim, v'Iyov, Mishlei, Keheles, Shir Hashirim, v'Kinos. Kinos is also known as Eicha, Daniel, Megillas Esther, Ezra, v'Divrei Hayomim. Ulaman d'Omar, Iyov v'Mei Moshe Haya. Later in the Gemara, there will be an extensive discussion, an extensive sugya dealing with the book of Job, or Iyov as we refer to him. He was positioned historically where? Well, you're going to see a plethora of opinions as to that issue. But there was an opinion that said Iyov was rather early in the scheme of things. He was in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. So, Likdamei Liyov Bereisha, then Iyov should have been the first of the book of writings. Because as far as the rest of the book of writings are concerned, as far as the rest of Ksuv are concerned, they are all later than the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. So put Iyov at the beginning. The Gemara says, "Aschuli bepuranusa lo maschalinan." To open up the third section of the Tanakh, the Ksuvim, with puranusa, with literally punishment, pain, suffering, which characterized Iyov. We don't want to open up a whole section with puranus. Question: Verus nami puranusa puranusi, the book of Ruth. Well, you know, it describes, it opens with a famine and the death of Elimelech and his Machlon and Kilion. It's a very, we'll say, a depressing type of work. And yet, the Ksuvim opens up with Rus. So the Gemara says, Puranus de Islei Achris. It's a book of Puranus, but it has a, we'll call it a sparkling future to it. In other words, we know that from Rus there came forth the Davidic dynasty, the Malchus Beis David. That's Yisrei Achris. Achris is an end or a future. The Yomer of Yochanan, Loma Nikra Shmo Rus, why did she have that name? She also Mimeno David, she reveal. The word reveal and the word Rus, the Resh Vov, we'll say Ru. How do you like the pun there with the root, Rus? You know? That, we'll say, etymology is reflective of the relationship between Rus and her descendant David. There came forth from Rus, and that's how she got the name David, who satisfied the Almighty Beshiros with Yishbochos with his songs and praises. David being the compiler, the editor of the Book of Psalms, Book of Tehillim. You notice we have a frame section here. According to Tosis and Diramasu Luman Domar, this is essentially the continuation or the end of the Tanaic source before, where we discuss Sidron Shel Ksuvim, so Umi Kosvan, and who wrote these holy writings we spoke about, the Nevi'im and the Ksuvim, the Nach abbreviation, Nun Chof Nevi'im Ksuvim, who wrote the books. So you'll notice triangles appear. And on the side, we've indicated that Rishimas Mechabrei Sifrei HaTanach. This is a list of the authors of the various works of the Tanakh. So, Mikosan, who wrote them? Moshe Kosef Sifro. Sifro means his book. The Chumash, the five books of Moses, as we call them. He wrote his book, Uparshas Bilam V'Yov, and he also wrote the book of Yov. Parshas Bilam, interestingly, even though it's part of the Sefer Torah, isn't it? Rashi is sensitive. This is why is it recorded here separately? So let's look at Rashi together. Just a couple lines up from here in the Rashi, Parshas Bilam, Nevuosov, Mishalov, the prophecies and the parables. Afapi Sheinon Tzorchei Moshe V'Tirosso, the Seder Myself. Even though there are no, we don't learn in any explicit fashion commandments. And laws from that section of the Torah. Parshas Bilam is, of course, in Sefer Bamidbar, Parshas Balak. And that's why it's, since it doesn't have, when you look at it, as I say, on a purely, let's say, scriptural level, without making any references to Torah Shabbat, Pan, Drosh Hashem, Psukim, on a superficial level, it's a section of Torah that doesn't have any connection to mitzvahs per se, and that's why it's referred to as a separate entity. So Moshe Rabbeinu, he wrote those. Yehoshua Kosav Sifro, the book of Yehoshua, Joshua, Ushmoyne Psukim Shebetorah, and the last eight psukim of the Torah. Rashi says that's min vayomos Moshe ad sofa sefer, from the posuk of vayomos Moshe until the end of the sefer Torah, the last eight psukim. Shmuel kosav sifro, the book of Shmuel, the shoftim, the book of Judges, the Rus. David kosav sefer tilim al yedei asoras akenim. He wrote the sefer tilim with contributing authors. Al yedei odom harishon, al yedei malki tzedek, al yedei avram, al yedei Moshe, al yedei Haman. We continue at the top of Daf Tes Vov, the Al Yedei Shloisha B'nei Korach, who account for numbers 8, 9, and 10 of the 10 contributors. The Tosis will elaborate, will discuss this matter further. We'll, Mitzvah Shem, wait till we get to it then. Yirmiyah Kosav Sifro, he wrote the book of Yirmiyahu, the Sefer Melachim, the Kinos Kinos, we explained before, was Megillas Eicha, that we customarily read on Tisha B'Av. Chizkia, the Siato, Kosvo, the word Siato, Rashi says, B'nei Doros, Shuchi Yom Machrov, other members of his generation that outlived him, Chizkia being a king toward the latter part of the first Beis HaMikdash period. So Chizkia and his people, Kosvo, Yeshaya, Mishle, Shirashirim, the Kehelis. Anshei Nesas Agdela, Kosfu, the Anshei Nesas Agdela, Rashi says, Chagai Zechar Malachi, Zerubbabel, Mordechai, V'chavei Rehem. These are members of what in English is referred to as the Great Assembly. That was a group of 120 great people called leadership, a leadership body of the Jewish people, and that included the end of the prophets, the last of the prophets, and Zerubbabel, Mordechai, and their colleagues. So that august body of men, Kotzfu, Yechezkel, Ushnemosar, Daniel, and Megillas Esther. Ezra, Kosav, Sifro, the Yachas Shel Divrei Yomim Ad Lo. And Ezra wrote his own book, the Book of Ezra, and the genealogy of the Book of Divrei Yomim, Book of Chronicles, Ad Lo. Mr. Shem, come. Rashi says Ad Lo means Ad Shiyiches Atzmo, until he accounted for his own genealogy. After all, Book of Chronicles is a historical recap of the Tanakh, and Ezra being at the time of the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash. So, within that work of Divrei Yomim, there is a hint to Ezra's own genealogy. His father was Seroya by name, who is accounted for there. Misaya le Rav. This supports a teaching of Rav. Diomar Yudama Rav lo Olo Ezra mi Bavel. Ezra did not. Ezra was in the Babylonian exile between the during the time of after the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash and the rebuilding of the second. Ezra did not arise to Eretz Yisrael. Did not leave Bavel ad sheyiches atzmo veola, until he accounted for his own genealogy, and then came. Now, the Rashi says, "Maseya le v'chulei ad sheyiches atzmo shekosav divrei hayomim ad sheyiches bo es atzmo." The Tanaic source serves as a support for Rav, namely, within the Tanaic source, it was noted that Ezra wrote the book of Divrei Hayomim, and Rav's teaching indicates that Ezra was responsible for recording genealogy, the genealogy until his own therein. The Gemara continues, Uman Aske, who finished off Divrei Hayomim. After all, it says that Ezra accounted for the genealogy Ad Lo, until himself, as far as Rashi's pshat is concerned, and Tosis will see there's a different pshat. But who finished it off? Nechemya ben Chachalya. At this point, we turn our attention to the Tosfos on Daf Yud Dalet Omid Aleph. We're going to be beginning with the second Tosfos on the Omid. The first Tosfos we dealt with as part of our recording of Daf Yud Gimel. This Tosfos corresponds to the Gemara 13 lines from the top. Begvil shisha tfachim beklaf bekama. Before we continue with the Tosfos itself, we have a taktsir on the side, a summation of the Tosfos. Gvil hamuzker b'gemara nitan. The gvil mentioned in the Torah is subject to lechatcha l'shnayim. You can split it. You can peel it into two parts. One is shichva el yoyna. When you peel this gvil, it's an animal skin essentially. Once of course the hair is removed, you peel it apart. The upper layer shichva el yoyna nikra klaf. That's called klaf. That's an expression we saw in the Gemara. Shichva tachtona, the lower of the two layers, hasomoch lebosur, the layer that's closer to the animal flesh, nikra duch sustus. B'shneim, regarding both of these layers, the klaf, the outer layer, and the duch sustus, the lower layer, if you want to write on them, you want to use them for writing holy works. Bishneim, regarding these two layers, mokim haksiva, who the mokim hachatach, the place for the writing is at the point that you peel them apart, so that the cloth, the outer layer of skin, where will you do the writing? On the inside part, the part facing the flesh. On the desustus, which was the lower layer, where would you do the writing? Where would you write? You would write on the upper side, on the top side, the part that would be facing the outside, so to speak. That's where you would write if you were using desustus. And now the Tosfos, Bigvil Shisha Tvachim, we mentioned more of that. If you were writing a Sefer Torah and Feel, so it would measure 6 Tvachim. Beklaf Bekama, and if you were using Klaf, so we saw in the Gemara, no response to that. Gvil, who, or Shalo Niskan Klal. Gvil is animal skin that hasn't been subject to processing. Elo sheshiru es asayar, all that it experienced was the removal of the hair. The kaiswin boy the mokim sayar, and you would write on the outside surface of the cloth where the hairs once were. Ulahachi kori le gvil. The term gvil is actually a borrowed expression. Why is it called gvil? She'eno mesukan. Gvil reflects upon that which has not been processed. It's kind of it's in its almost raw state. Kid Omer Liel, as we saw at the beginning of our perek, when dealing with the stones used for creating a division wall, gvil is avni delo mishafyan. It's a reference to uncut stones. Basically, they're stones used for constructing wall after you remove them from the stone quarry. So the Loma Shafion stones that have not been smoothed down. So they're practically raw. Upa'omim choytchim oso lishnayim derech ovyo. And sometimes the gvil, oso is a pronoun, it. It's a reference to the gvil that the raw leather was split into two, derech uvyo. In other words, you would split apart its thickness. The oisei sheklapi sayar kori klaf, the upper layer, literally the part facing the hair. That's the upper layer is called klaf. The oisei shelitzad boso kori duchsustus, the lower layer is called duchsustus. And now Tosfos gives us the etymology. The losha duchsustus have pirusho mokoim bosar. The word duchsustus is a compound word meaning place of flesh, meaning the, since it's called the lower layer of the skin, when split apart, it's the part that's facing, that's touching upon or covering the actual flesh. And we mentioned the etymology. The Beloshon Modai, some have a different gear, so Yavon and Greek language, Kurin Labosa, the word Bosar is Sustus. So that accounts for the second half of the word. The duch, the first part of the word, duch, hainu mokom, it means place, kamo duch ploni, an expression you find in and elsewhere in the Gemara, such and such place, ploni means such and such duch, place. So the word duch, place, sustus, me, it's the place of the me. And now, as far as writing is concerned, klaf and the sustus, the kaisvin, ala klaf, if you're going to write on the klaf, litzad basar, on the inside surface of the klaf, kid omar perek hamoitzi, as is taught in that perek in Masechet Shabbos. The al duchsustus, if you're going to be writing on duchsustus, that's the lower layer after you split apart the gvil. If you're going to write on duchsustus, litzad sayar, on the upper surface of that lower layer. The tzatzer means on the face, on the part facing where the hair is. Uveshneim, And when it comes to both of these, klaf and dilsustis, the result is b'mokom chatach. You're going to be writing on that surface that was originally attached, and now chatach, where you split them apart. The shomu toiv lichtov, that is where it's really good for writing. The shelonu din klaf yesh lahem velo din dilsustis. Tosis comments on in his time, he refers to our skins, our parchment has the status of cloth. It's an interesting point, and I'm just going to throw out the point for any listener to research if he should want to. When Tosis says ours has the status of cloth, one gets the feeling that our parchment, the Tosis parchment, was not. Not necessarily a thick piece of parchment that was simply peeled apart. Otherwise, why would Tosfos have to make reference to our parchment being having the status of? So maybe the parchment that Tosfos refers to was produced in a different fashion. Nevertheless, we have to categorize the parchment that we use. So Tosfos says that the parchment that we use has the status of klaf. Now, classification is very significant, as you will see now. Velo din dechsusis, it doesn't have the status of dechsusis, and as a result of that classification, l'kach kisvin aleim tefillin. Therefore, we can write on our parchments tefillin. She'ein k'sherim al dechsusis, el al klaf, nomer bo siyayin. As far as the writing of tefillin is concerned, one would not be allowed to write tefillin on duchsustus. Therefore, how is it that we write tefillin on our parchment? Tosfos says, because our parchment has the status of cloth. We now turn our attention to the next Tosfos, Dilma. This refers to the Gemara, 19 lines from the top. After hearing in the Gemara that he wrote 400 Sifrei Torah, and we said that Rabbi Ami had written 400 Sifrei Torah, so that's humanly impossible. So what might have been the Gemara suggested was that he had actually written one posuk, and that one posuk is Torah Tzivolonu Moshe. The Omer Rabbeinu Tam, the Oisei posuk, namely of Torah Tziva, Korui Torah. You can refer to it using the term Torah. Kinora Perek Shlishi de Sukkah. In the third parak of Sukkah, it says Kotan Hayodeh Ledaber Ovem Lamdo Torah. My Torah. Torah Tzivolonu Moshe, a child who becomes of age where he can talk, his father is expected to teach him Torah. What is Torah that he'll teach this toddler? He teaches him the pasuk Torah Tzivolonu Moshe. Hence, since that is what the Gemara there refers to as Torah, the idea of writing 400 Sifrei Torah could very well be 400 times that one pasuk. That's quite possible to accomplish. We now continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur HaMaschil Shelo. This refers to the Gemara, 16 lines from the bottom, where we were accounting for the an extra 2 tefachim in the width of the Aron, and actually, before we continue with the Tosfos itself, we glance at our taktir on the side. Tosfos oina l'sheila. Tosfos responds to a question. Lama tzrichim lahashir oid mokom ba'aron kedei shelo yitsefer Torah shehoya b'fnim yotz v'nichzus b'dochak. Why is there any necessity of having an extra 2 tefachim in of space in the width of the aron so as to avoid the squeezing in of the Sefer Torah? B'zman shelichor lo hayu motzim asuklal. No one would, they wouldn't ever take the Sefer Torah out of the Aron. me'achar she chutz mi biyom kippur also likonis the kodesh kodashim. Besides Yom Kippur, it was forbidden to enter the Holy of Holies. So if it's forbidden to enter the Holy of Holies, where do you come to taking out the Sefer Torah? So, and if you're not going to be taking out the Sefer Torah, why do we have to account for extra space to make it easy to take it in and return it? So that having been said, we now turn to the Tosfos. Shlo yehi Sefer Torah yotze v'nichnas kishu dochuk. V'im toimar, you might ask, v'halo lo ha yumotzei motzei min aron. They never removed it from the aron. D'ha asuli konis beveis kodesh hakadoshim. It's forbidden to enter the Holy of Holies. Yom Kippurim, as far as Yom Kippur, which is in fact one day of the year that the high priest, the Kohen Gadol, would go in there. We don't find as part of the order of activities which are detailed in Maseches Yoma, we don't find in the order of events of activities the removal of a Sefer Torah. V'yesh lomar, we answer the litzorech kidei l'sakein shori likones beveis kodesh hakadoshim, for a purpose, for a specific need, like a need to repair, one was allowed to enter the kodesh hakadoshim kedamrin be'erevin. If let's say the structure of the Beis HaMikdash needed repair. The structure, meaning that part of the Beis HaMikdash in the Kodesh HaKadosh needed repair, they would enter. Furthermore, in light of that reasoning, one would be allowed to enter the Kodesh HaKadosh for the purpose of preserving the Sefer Torah so that it should not become full of ipush, which is a mildew, and become ruined thereby. So it needs to be aired out from time to time. Vegam mishechorav mishkan shilo ad shebono shlomo beis hamikdash. And furthermore, there was an entire historical period from the time of the destruction of the mishkan that stood for 369 years at Shiloh. During the time of Eli HaKohen, the time of Shmuel HaNovi, Ad Shebono Shlomo Beis HaMikdash, until King Solomon built the first Beis HaMikdash. So you had a span of many years. The Aron HaBris was not located in either a Mishkan nor a Beis HaMikdash during that period, so there was no prohibition of entering the area that the Oron during those years was located. And during those years, you could go to the Oron, open it up, and take out the Sefer Torah and Lionbo to learn from it. So certainly during those years, we had to have an accounting of extra space to facilitate the easy removal and return of the Sefer Torah. We now continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur HaMaschil Etzba. This refers to the Gemara 10 lines from the bottom, Etzba Umechza L'Koysel Zeh. Now that is a girsa that when we read the Gemara, we didn't read the Gemara with that, and you'll see Tosfos explains why in fact not to have that girsa. So that, as I say, we're referring to the Gemara on Yud Dalet Amud Aleph, 10 lines from the bottom. We had just the expression etzba l'kosel zeh. So Tosfos says near the Rabbeinu Tam de lo goras u'mechza, not to have that as part of the girsa, which would have been a finger and a half for each wall. Not so, just one finger per wall. Elo etzba l'kosel zeh, just one finger. De I goras u'mechza, if you're going to have as the calculation 1.5 fingers, so tikshi, then you would raise the following question. Shnei Mosar b'shneim asar hechi yasvi kideporach lekamon. If you're going to have etzbal mechsa to account for the wall thickness, then how much halal, how much airspace are you going to be left with? You're going to be left with just 12 tfachim of airspace, because you had a total length of 12 and a half tfachim. If you're going to account for 1.5 fingers for the walls, then, and just assume for a moment that 1.5 fingers would be 1/2 a tefach, you're going to be left with 12 of airspace, and the luchos themselves were 12 tefachim in length. How can 12 fit into exactly 12, as we saw raised as a question later on in the Gemara with the issue of the Sefer Torah and the two tefachim? Elo etzba goras. Rather have as your girsa the word etzba without the chatzi, without the half. And furthermore, the etzba, the one finger that we are referring to by way of measure, fizutrasi, the small finger, the pinky. So you're going to have two pinkies. When we were learning the Gemara, we mentioned that there were four fingers in a tefach, but I also issued a disclaimer that we wouldn't stick with that till the end. When we speak about four fingers being a tefach, that's if they're four of the we'll say regular size fingers, not the pinky. Four pinkies is less than half a tefach. The havyon shisha b'tefach. As far as if you're going to use the pinky as a measure, as a subdivision of a tefach, you would need six of them. By having two etzbois for the wall thickness, and each one of them is a pinky thickness of wall, so we're still left with a little extra space that we need to account for, so that you don't have the 12 of the luchos being given only 12 exactly of airspace. So this way you have 12 and a fraction of airspace, with the walls accounting for the thickness each one of one pinky. We continue with the Tosfos Shebohen, the last Tosfos on the Omid. This refers to the Gemara 6 lines from the bottom. Technical note, the text of our Gemara had Sheboi Amudim Omdim, but that doesn't make a difference. We're referring to the two Amas, two Tvachim, that is, two Tvachim of airspace that remained after placing the luchos in the Aron, and we're dealing with Shitas Rebbe Yehuda, and within those extra, we'll say two tvachim, there were silver staffs that lay in the length of the Aron, there with accounting for the extra two tvachim. Before we read the Tosfos, we also have a taktsir. Tosfos Masbir, Loma Oisen Ha'amudim Shehayu Ba'aron Asu Mikesev Lo Mizov. Why is it that those staffs that we just made reference to were made of silver, not made of gold? Nire LeRavenu Tam, the Simin LeHamodas Yisrael Hoya. These staffs represented the standing, the strength, the perpetuity of Am Yisrael, of the nation of Israel. V'lo asum shel zahav, and they were not made of gold, shelo lahazkir maise ha'egel, so as not to remind kivyochol, to create, remind the Kodesh Baruch Hu kivyochol of the incident involving the golden calf. And this practice is based on the idea of the Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor. The kateger, the antagonist, the prosecutor, doesn't turn into a sanegor, a defender. And since gold and the Maisa Egel was a source of antagonism for the Jewish people, a source of downfall for the Jewish people, that same material, gold, cannot now be used as something signifying the arising and the perpetuity of Klal Yisrael. V'chein amrinon Rosh Hashanah Maseches Rosh Hashanah the Mishumachi Lohio Kohen Mishamish Lifnei B'Yom Kippurim the big days of. And with this in mind, the Ein Kateger Nasa Sanegor, the Kohen Gadol who functioned on Yom Kippur, when he went into the Holy of Holies for the offering of the special keteris, the Yom Kippur keteris, he would not wear his standard golden garments. The standard 8 big day zahav were replaced for his entrance to the Kodesh HaKadoshim with 4 big day lavan. Based on this idea of Ein Kateger Nasa Sanegar, V'hasam Parach, there in Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara asks, V'ha Have Oron Shehoya Shel Zahav V'hoya Lifnim. The Holy Ark itself was made of gold, and it was located in there, Lifnim, inside in the Holy, in the inner sanctum. So, what about your principle of Ein Kateger Nasa Sanegar U'mishani? And the Gemara answers, Mechaper Koaminon. When we speak about Ein Kateger Nasa Sanegar, that's when you're dealing with something that will function as a source of atonement. And the entrance of the Kohen Gadol Yom Kippur into the Holy of Holies, into the Kodesh Hashem, was for kapora purposes, for atonement purposes. The presence of the Holy Ark was not there, or it wasn't constructed for the purpose of atonement. V'chani amudim nami hoyu kemo mechaper. These staffs that are the subject of our discussion, the staffs that lay inside the Aron, were like a source of atonement. Shem asuyim simin l'modus Yisrael. They were a sign or a representation of the continuity and strength of Am Yisrael, and that requires, we'll say, atonement, cleansing of sins, in order to assure the perpetuity of Klal Yisrael. V'hu sheyisid ha'payet. Payet is a reference to piyutim, various passages that are recited on different occasions. You find some printed in Sidurim, and in the piyut it says the following: Tavnis ois Yosef amudov osa kesef. Now that's I would say somewhat cryptic, and in fact that's the nature of many piyutim. There are allegories and parables and things that require, we'll say, deciphering. So Tavnis ois Yosef amud avosa kesef, the Tosfos explains, Bishvil Tavnis ois Yosef. What does that mean? Simen shel Yosef behainu egel. The tribe of Yosef is associated with egel, a calf. How is Yosef associated with a calf? The Yosef Nikoshar, the tribe of Yosef in Parshas V'zois HaBrocha is referred to as by the Pasuk Bechor Shoroi Hodar Lo. That you'll find in the Brochos of Yosef, that Moshe Rabbeinu blessed the tribe of Yosef, referring to him as Shoro, as a shor, an ox comes from a calf. So Yosef is cited by the Payet. Tavnis ois Yosef is, in other words, the reference to the Egel. And because of the Egel, Lekach Amudav Osa Kesef Velo Zahav. And therefore, as the Payet says, Amudav Osa Kesef, the staffs were made of silver and not gold. In other words, the reference to silver is, that was the material used to the exclusion of gold. Shelo lahazgir b'maiso egel. So as not to arouse the memory of that unfortunate episode, the egel of Zav, the golden calf. So once again, the purpose of this Tesis was to explain and highlight why the Amudim were made of silver and not of gold. We now continue on Omid Beis with Tesis Dimer Masil Trey. This refers to the Gemara, seven lines from the top, and we were dealing with the calculations of the Sefer Torah and the space available in the Oron, and the Gemara commented, Trey betray Hechi Yosef, how can something that measures a diameter of two fit into an available airspace of exactly two? Two doesn't fit into two. You need a little extra in order for something having a diameter or a width of two to fit into it. Mashma, the Gemara conveys the following understanding. When we mention two of diameter, Shalim Amudim Hoya Hekefo Shisha, that the a Sefer Torah together with the Atzei Chaim, the poles, when we speak of a Sefer Torah having a circumference of six tefachim, that includes the Atzei Chaim. Shimoya Kefa below Amudim, if the circumference referred to was exclusive of the Amud of the poles, Im kein ofishle mishnei tefachim b'hadi amudim, then when we speak of a diameter of two tefachim, the diameter would be more than two tefachim together with the pole. So that since we were discussing the diameter of the Sefer Torah as it was placed in the Aron, that must have been a diameter including the Almud, including the pole. We continue with the next Tesis, Dibra Maschil, Verevi Meir. This refers to the Gemara, 13 lines from the top, Verevi Meir, Amudim Hecho Havu Kaini. According to Verevi Meir, where were the silver poles placed? We had accounted for their location and dimensions up till this point for Rabbi Yehuda. But what about Rabbi Meir? Afapi sheyesh revach harbei leRabbi Meir, b'chol ha'orech. Even though, according to Rabbi Meir, according to his calculations, there was a lot of extra space in along the length of the Aron, Levad mi keneged Sefer Torah, besides that part of the Aron in which the Sefer Torah was lying. The Sefer Torah's length was lying along the width of the Aron, and at that point in the Aron, after accounting for the walls of the Aron, and the length of the Sefer Torah, and we said a little extra space in order to in which to maneuver things. Besides that part of the width of the Aron, the Sefer Torah itself didn't take up much of the length of the Aron. The entire diameter of the Sefer Torah was just two tefachim. So the rest of the length of the Aron was unaccounted for. Means there was plenty of space. So even though there was plenty of additional space along the length of the Aron, besides the part that was near that the Sefer Torah occupied, Poshet Hoyu Lo Shehoyu Munochim Betzad Rosh HaOron Shesefer Torah Munach. It was obvious that the poles had to lie at the, we'll say, the top, the beginning of the length of the Aron, the part where the Sefer Torah was located. And as a result, we had to account for Rabbi Meir's positioning of the poles, and as a result,